This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, he did it. Aaron Judge hit home run number 62 last night, and now let's have the fun conversation like everybody else is having. Exactly what does this mean? I've been saying as we've been progressing towards this mark that it's all personal, right? It depends on how you view the 1998 chase, and even after that, the chases that and the runs after that, from 2001, the 73 mark that Barry Bonds had. But I really do think that for most of us who were alive at that time and aware of what was going on at that time, when we look back at the home run race and people talk about the effect of the home run race, it's weird that nobody talks about 2001. And nobody talks about this great unified interest in what Barry Bonds was doing. Because we knew then what we know now, that this mark was tainted. It took a couple of years, but we started to realize that there was something wrong here. Now, don't get me wrong. We had Pedro Gomez, the late Pedro Gomez, traveling with Barry Bonds, covering the story on a daily basis. But I think the unification of fandom, where we were all buzzing about it and there was interest across the media spectrum, was really 1998. And then in years that followed, where Sosa did it again and McGuire did it again, and then they were like Sosa had 3 years where he was in the 60s and McGuire had 2 years. 1 year he had 70, the other he had, I think, a 67, if I'm not mistaken. And those were the times where I think we went, whoa, 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 slow down. Right, we had to wait all of this time, 30 plus years, to get to a moment where we were watching one guy pursue Roger Maris's 61. And then in that 1 year, we got two, and then they did it again, and then another guy is coming up, and he's doing it too. And then it made us all sort of go, okay, wait, maybe the hat size thing is real. Like, maybe the bulkiness of it isn't because they work out at the gym all the time. Right, there was something that was tainted about it. But the reality of it is, and we're going to get into this some more, is that this is what baseball has decreed. That what you saw in 1998 and in 99 and 2001, they were real. They were real marks. Whether they were tainted, not tainted, that's up for all of us individually to decide. But boy, you got a real feeling last night that there was a celebration that went a little beyond just a league record. We'll talk about it coming up next. We'll also get to the Dallas Cowboys. Tom Brady's marital woes. I hate getting into that story, but it may affect football. We got all that coming up this hour. Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. And your thoughts on 62 happened yesterday as Aaron Judge blasted the AL record against the Texas Rangers in Arlington. Today is the last day of the regular season, and the playoff matchups are set now. The Atlanta Braves did go and win the NL East, so the Mets are going to find themselves in the wild card round. They'll take on San Diego. The Cardinals are the division winner out of the NL Central, but they have the worst of the three records, so they will also be in the wild card round. They'll face Philadelphia. Likewise, Cleveland is in that same boat. They'll face Tampa Bay, and Seattle will battle Toronto. So those are the four wild card matchups. It's a best two out of three, and that begins on Friday. But Aaron Judge hit home run number 62 last night in Arlington. And again, as we've been pointing out, this wasn't coming as a surprise. We knew, we didn't really know because it was like three games left. The Yankees played a doubleheader yesterday and then they had one today. So we didn't know if he was going to break it or he was going to be stuck on 61 tied with Roger Maris. But in the anticipation that he was going to get 62, because it looked like he was not only on pace for that, but like 65, we had always had this conversation about, okay, this is actually happening. It was always sort of a thought, right, that when after Barry Bonds hit, 73, and then Major League Baseball started cracking down on performance-enhancing drugs in the way that they did, big, big, big suspensions, 50 games, up to a year, just the way they've just sort of hammered out on this, that we were wondering, will we ever see somebody hit 62 – that wasn't under the suspicious cloud of performance-enhancing drugs? And if that ever happened, what would we do about it as a fan base? And, you know, Giancarlo Stanton had like 59, I think. 50, so he came close. But nevertheless, we never really had the home run push that we did in the late 90s leading into 2001. And for the most part, I think people have gotten this right, which is, look, there's nothing we can do about it. Major League Baseball is not putting asterisks next to anything. Barry Bonds is the home run king. That's just the way it is. Whether you like it or not, that's the way it is. And the fault lies in two departments. It lies in Barry Bonds, who got caught up in the performance dancing drug world as much as anybody else in Major League Baseball. But it's also the fault of Major League Baseball, because they didn't really think to test this stuff in the way that they did and didn't seem to really care at the time until later when they realized that it was really skewing their game. And then all of a sudden, we villainized everybody that was participating in this when it was a lot of people. I mean, I grew up, Roger Clemens was the best pitcher in baseball. And now Roger Clemens is this sort of pariah, right? Same thing with a lot of players. They can't get into the Hall of Fame now. We're holding them back. And just sort of destroying anything that they built up because we're all mad about them cheating when in reality, baseball was at fault. And to a larger extent, we were at fault because, and I'm not blaming us per se, but when we did sort of realize it, we still kind of followed it. And I think in 2001, I think that's when people went, I don't really care. And then in 2007, when he broke the record, when Barry Bonds passed Hank Aaron, I think we really had enough of that. But I do remember covering games in Colorado, right? And where for most of the 10 years that I covered the Rockies, I went to about 30 games a year, maybe 40 games a year. So I saw just about everybody that came into town at some point. And the reality was, the Rockies were not a very good team, except for the 1 year that they went to the World Series. But for the most part, they weren't very good. And the Rockies sold their ticket packages like any other team that wasn't very good. You're not coming to see us. You're coming to see who we're playing. So they would have ticket values that were based on who the opponent was. Oh, you want to see the Cubs? Everybody wants to see the Cubs. This is a Tier A game. Right. The Yankees may be making a very rare appearance in interleague play. That was a Tier A game. Red Sox, a Tier A game. The Dodgers, a divisional opponent. That was a Tier A. So were the Giants. The Giants weren't the Giants that won those World Series later on. They had Barry Bonds. Right. That's who they had. And that's why it was a Tier A game. And I remember sitting in the press box, Bonds would come up and everybody stopped what they were doing to watch him hit. I remember people watching him in batting practice. And we all kind of knew. It was past 1998. We all kind of knew. So we all sort of still, there was a way we still sort of admired the achievement, but yet putting our hand out to get some distance away from it as a full embrace of fandom. But we're stuck with this, right? We're stuck with this. Trust me, if none of that stuff happened, if McGuire and Sosa and Bonds, if none of them had touched steroids and none of them got to 61 home runs, right? They got maybe 58, 57. What happened last night would have been 1,000 times bigger than it was. And that was big. I was in a restaurant last night. People were getting alerts on their phones. It would have been 1,000 times bigger. To go from 1961 to 2022, if none of that happened, if none of those three guys broke the record of Roger Maris, if none of them did, to go from 1961 to 2022 with 61 being the real mark, it would have been an explosion last night. But it was somewhat muted because there is a portion of the country that's not buying this as any other significant mark than an American League record. And as I've said many times, the way Major League Baseball is heading, this is going to be irrelevant. What's going to happen when you talk about AL and NL awards and AL and NL records? That's going to be for old timers. Look where I'm heading. because there's a generation that is coming up where there's only National League and American League only by name, just to separate teams into some categories for simplification of the postseason. That's it. It'll have nothing to do with scheduling. It has nothing to do with rules. It has nothing to do with anything. It'll just be American League, National. Don't be surprised if 10 years they don't pull an all-star game draft like the NBA is doing. There's going to be such a blurred line between the two leagues where there is nothing special about either one of them that what you saw yesterday in terms of it's an American League record, and everyone's going to go, so what? There is, that day is coming for a generation that's coming up, if they're paying attention to baseball at all. And that's what yesterday sort of was. Yesterday was for a grasp for people of an older fan base that felt like they were cheated out of something they wanted to see sometime in their life. But the reality is that moment's gone. It didn't have the same impact. But I remember 1998. I knew about Andrew Steen-Dione because that was sort of a story that was brewing, but I didn't care. I was in my 20s. I didn't care. I had spent a majority of my childhood with my brother as baseball fans, collecting baseball cards and following stats and following these numbers, wanting to see something. DiMaggio's hit streak, Roger Maris's home run record, somebody bat 400, whatever it was. These were things as a child I wanted to see as a young baseball fan. So when I got to my 20s and this thing was going on in Major League Baseball where everybody was talking about it and everybody was following it, and we were interrupting NFL games to buzz about it, that was something that I was totally immersed in. And later, when it was sort of tainted, I still said, yeah, but you know what? I got the emotion out of the deal. So maybe in the after effect, I was sort of cheated out of this. But it doesn't change the fact that its pursuit and the emotions of the pursuit is what I wanted this whole time. And I got it. I did. And so much so that when Barry Bonds was doing it in 2021, I didn't need it anymore. Because I knew what the sport had become. So I'm not one that's looking at Aaron Judge and saying 62, that's the record. That's the mark. I'm not Roger Maris Jr. Because I think baseball has a bed to lie in, and I think everybody sort of that was involved in it has a bed to lie in, and that's part of the legacy. But it still was an important moment. It still was a big moment. It's just going to lose its impact later down the road. I think people pointing out that Aaron, like there was sarcasm so much on Twitter yesterday of people saying, he did it, he did it, he now has the seventh best single season total in Major League history. And that's true. It's true. But it's sarcasm, and it takes away from something that I think people like me just are just clinging on to just a little bit. Right? I know, look, I remember when there was a congressional hearing for steroids. Remember that where McGuire and Sosa, Rafael Palmeiro, Jose Canseco, they were all talking to Congress. And I remember at the time saying, look, guys, because everyone was saying, well, it's Congress. Well, they got other things to worry about. I'm like, yeah, they do. But also baseball has an antitrust exemption. And, you know, they're interested in the business of baseball because it's important. I think people were missing the point. It wasn't that Congress was looking into steroids because it was tainting numbers. What they were trying to get baseball to look at was, what system are you creating? What is the end result of this? What happens when everybody in Major League Baseball realizes that the game has changed? The way you prepare for games and set yourself up physically for games is now changed. That if you want the big contracts, you better look like McGuire and you better look like Bonds. You better figure out a way to do it. So get with your local pusher and find a way to inject some stuff into your system. If that's the norm, what happens down the line? And I said, that's why they're looking into this. They're not looking into this to settle the 62 debate. They were looking into it to say, if you do this, everything trickles down. So if all of you guys are bulked up on steroids, the minor league players will need to be bulked up on steroids. It's the only way they'll be able to make it. They won't be able to make it on natural talent. They'll see that they'll look around and go, well, the only way I'm getting to the majors is if I start doing this too. That's the only way I'm going to, I need a body like what they have. And then if the minor leagues are doing it, the colleges are going to do it. And then the high schools are going to do it. And now we got a problem. Real, real problem. It starts from the top. You see it with the NFL in terms of concussion. If the NFL has safety mechanisms in place, it's supposed to trickle down to the high schools. Hey, look, if we have a protocol, you need to have a protocol. If we are taking guys out of games, you need to be taking guys out of games. If we are keeping guys out for a couple of weeks, you need to be keeping guys out for a couple of weeks. And that was what Congress was worried about back in 2005. What was the trickle down of it all? Were high school kids going to be injecting steroids so they could get looked at by a scout? Is that the world we were going to have 10, 15 years down the line as this became more prevalent? Aaron Judge's record last night is opening the door to a lot of questions about baseball and its history. But as I said earlier, for a guy like me, it's just one grasp at something that I know is going to be lost. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. We'll talk more about this as the morning goes along, because again, pretty historical moment for Major League Baseball. The postseason is set. We'll get into the NFL as well, as Dak Prescott is targeting the game against the Rams this weekend, but I don't know if he'll play. We'll talk about that and more as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
High fly ball, deep left. There it goes, soaring into history. He's done it. He has done it. 62. Aaron Judge is the American League single season home run leader. The AL King. Case closed.
Michael Kay with the call of the Aaron Judge 62nd home run. I saw that an investment banker got the ball yesterday. Some guy that was, I don't know.
Who didn't need the $2 million?
Didn't need the $2 million.
All right, that's, if Darren Rovell is right about the price of the ball.
I have this love-hate with Darren Rovell. Like, I can't live without some of his silly tweets about some crazy things. But then there's the other, like, he's quick on the business stuff. Like, he's very fast on how much things are worth in terms of memorabilia. Like, as soon as it was hit, he was like tweeting out, that ball is worth $2 million. But then he pointed out, wait till the end of the season to sell it, because if he gets another one, then that ball sort of devalues the other ball. I don't know how it works. Like, I don't know.
Or sell it right. I think he was saying sell it right away, because if he hits another one.
Oh, yeah. If it's another one, then it's valuable. Yeah. Like, yeah. Try to get rid of it as quickly as you can if you're trying to sell it. So, I don't know. But I know we didn't get the, this belongs to Mr. Judge. I think I'll give it to him.
Yankees did take him back there. I mean, first of all, the ball, I was reading up on it too, and I learned that the ball has to be authenticated.
Right, and they don't have to authenticate it.
No.
So you're kind of stuck with a ball that may not be, like, that's sort of, isn't that the thing that you can hold over the head of the person? I'm like, well, we're not authenticating it, so you might as well take what we're going to give you.
Yeah.
Right?
But I think they, this because you could clearly see that he was the one who caught the ball. I mean, he just barehanded that thing out of the sky.
Yes,
loved it.
But you really do need to authenticate the ball.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it no, doesn't you definitely matter. Do. Like, you could have 10 of these balls. You know, you've got to authenticate.
And I'm just curious. I'm certain the Yankees made offers.
Oh, I'm sure they did. Rovell was saying, like, you should get the bat and the jersey of that moment. Like, you should get the jersey off his back and the bat. But those are probably going to Cooperstown. Like, the Yankees aren't going to give them those things. The Yankees would just be like, no, these are, the Cooperstown's probably going to take this stuff.
And season tickets wouldn't be worth it because he lives in Dallas.
Yeah, lives in Dallas. He probably doesn't want crappy Rangers tickets.
I know.
So he's probably like, no, I'll just keep it and see what Todd McFarlane will pay for it. So let's go down that road. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, if teams didn't put an emphasis on it of wanting the baseball, then we wouldn't have these sort of things where the player wants. The players, if everybody in Major League Baseball said, you know what, when we get a home run, that it's gone. We don't care about it. We don't want them. We'll take the bat. We'll take the jersey. But you guys have the baseballs. Do whatever you want with them. Then it would just be among collectors, and again, you get what you get for it. But then, but there's a sense of like these are valuable to the player and the team, so you sort of hold them hostage for it. And this is we get this all the time, like you know whether it's Albert Pujols' home run or Aaron Judge's home runs or anybody else that's on something historic. It's you know everybody feels like some feel like what they could get out of it, and others feel like. You know, I'm going to keep it and sell it and see what happens. But I always lose track of them anyway. It's like the Barry Bonds ball. I'm like, I don't even know where it is. I don't know who has it. I don't know what it went for. And the same thing here. I mean, I don't know if down the road if he gets rid of it or keeps it. So I don't know. Like I think it would be really tough for me if I was at Arlington last night and I caught it. I might just go. Nah, I think I'm going to keep this thing. You know, it's look, Aaron. Like I wouldn't be. Sarcastic about this, but I would be like, look, Judge, you turned down $213 million over 7 years because you wanted to better yourself and the value of you had. I have a thing that people are saying is worth $2 million. I mean, I'm just going to hand it back to you for a bat and tickets. Like this is a chance for me to do the exact same thing. So I'd be really hard for me to give it back. So, but if I grew up in New York and this was hit in New York, I might feel a connection to give it back to him. But I don't think I would. I think I'd probably keep it and see what I could get out of it. All right. So anyway, Aaron Judge got 62 last night, and everyone's still buzzing about what this means. And I knew this day was going to happen. I knew that this was going to be all right. Now the ball is in our court as baseball fans. What do we do with this? How do we process it? For some, it's the seventh most home runs in a single season. For others, this is the real record. For Roger Maris Jr., who was he at the game last night? Because again, I was in a restaurant.
I don't think he was at the game last night.
I don't think he was because he's been on the road with this team at home.
Because every video I saw, just kept showing Aaron Judge's mom.
Yeah, do you think that he just went, oh, look, I'm not
kidding. I saw 61, I'm done.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm done. You don't need me anymore.
I mean, he went to 8 straight games.
I mean, he was going to all these games, like waiting for
traveling with them.
Getting the press, you know, and then popping up. And every time he spoke, he's like, Aaron Judge is the clean one. Aaron Judge is the home run king. He's the real one. He's clean. Eh, all right. Again, I just think that's going to be lost as the years go by. It's the same thing with the steroid guys that are not in the Hall of Fame. I think there's a generation that's coming that's going to go, why? Why'd you guys keep them out? It was all part of the thing. It's all part of the ups and downs of sports. You have scandals. You don't have scandals. You have things that hit. Like, it's just the impact of it gets less and less and less as the further you get removed from it. And then there's always going to be a generation that wasn't around at that time, wasn't paying attention at that time. And then they grow up and then they look back and go, well, I mean, come on. You know, it's not that big of a deal. Look, it's very similar. Like when Roger Maris hit 61 home runs in 1961, for a while there was an asterisk next to it. Because Ford Frick was the commissioner of baseball, and he felt like that. No, this is not really the home run mark, because Babe Ruth did it in 154 games, and Roger Maris took 162 to do it. So he put an asterisk next to it. But baseball eventually got rid of that, and there isn't one today because and that seemed legit, right? Like that's a legit distinction between the two, rather than this sort of general arbitrary performance enhancing drugs thing that we didn't test for, that was not legal, but we didn't look on it the same way we looked on it, and we sort of let it go, and we, you know, all of those kind of things. Like what was Major League Baseball supposed to do to Mark McGwire back in 1998? Right? There wasn't really anything they could do. They didn't have anything again. They didn't feel like it was a big enough deal to do something about it. Now they worked with the union to get things into it, get things in place and sort of, you know, to be able to suspend players for it. So it's, again, it's one of those back and forth things that's going to happen. But it was still a fun run. I mean, it was really fun to watch Aaron Judge do this and bet on himself. Like Lamar Jackson is doing this year with the Baltimore Ravens. Aaron Judge did it this year, bet on himself, and he hit a home run. Huh. We'll talk football next. The NFL. Will Dak Prescott play this weekend? Should he play this weekend? We'll talk about that. Plus, what is going on around the league in terms of players getting out?
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Again, with thoughts on 62, if you want to lay them out, we'll get back to the NFL. So Jerry Jones saying in Dallas, well, no, Dak could play. He could play. But he also admitted in the interview that he can't grip the ball very well. So I have no idea if Dak Prescott is going to come back and play against the Rams. But Cooper Rush has won three straight games. And the Dallas Cowboys season is not lost like people thought it was going to be lost. I was in that boat. I had no idea what kind of quarterback Cooper Rush was going to be. But, you know, outside of the Giants with the record, even though I don't want to accuse the Giants of playing above their head. Listen, they're still evaluating Daniel Jones. It's still the kind of the first year under Brian Daboll. But the Cowboys have, you know, beat Cincinnati. They beat a pretty good Giants team record-wise, and then they took care of a Washington team that's not all that good. So there's some really good things to like about the way Cooper Rush is playing, and there's some things that you want more explosiveness because he hasn't thrown for over 250 yards in any of the games, but he's been throwing a pretty good ball. But Jerry, he doesn't rule out Dak because I think there's something about Jerry Jones, and I think this is kind of, in a way, in a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon kind of way, so bear with me here. In a way, this is kind of why I like him. I've always said one of the things that I've always respect about Jerry Jones, and sometimes I've not liked him for this, sometimes I've loved him for this, but in the end I respect him for this, is that he puts the Cowboys on this big pedestal that he separates himself and his team from all the other teams that are playing in the National Football League. Like, Jerry knows what he owns, right? He knows that he owns a team that gets more attention when things are going down than anywhere else. That even when the Cowboys were terrible, any drama that was going on with Dallas made bigger news than any drama on any team out there, including a Patriots team that was not very, didn't have a lot of drama, but had enough that sometimes you would go, what's going on with the Patriots? But when the Cowboys had drama, it was elevated higher. And a lot of that has to do with their owner. Oh, and general manager, of course, because he's the same guy. Because Jerry knows what he owns. He knows the value of that star, right? He knows that people in around the world know, they know this team and they buzz about this team. So in good times or bad times, Jerry knows that. And I think this is one of the reasons why when he does his radio hit in Dallas on The Fan, he says things because he knows, again, what people will do with it, right? Dak Prescott can't grip a football. Can't grip a football. He's not ready to play. It's Tuesday. Today is Wednesday. Will he be able to grip the football today? Will he be able to throw better today? We don't know. But is Jerry Jones ruling him out for an NFL game against the Rams, like a real professional game? No, of course he isn't. Why isn't he? Because he's doing a hit in Dallas, and he knows people are going to take that clip and run wild with it. That Jerry Jones is delusional on the Dak Prescott situation, or will Dak play? Maybe he will. Jerry Jones says it's a possibility, so we better pay attention to it. Jerry loves it. He loves playing these sort of games. I think Jerry Jones deep down absolutely knows Dak Prescott is not seeing that field Sunday. But at the same time, there's almost a little part of me that's like, I wonder if he will. Like, there's just a little part, even though I can't see, I've never, in the time, I mean, you know, in my times covering the Broncos and early in my career, the Patriots, I don't remember a quarterback who couldn't grip a football on a Tuesday playing the game on Sunday. Like you better be able to grip the football, but if you can't grip it, you usually are out. But there, and so to me, if he can't grip it on Tuesday, how will he need to progress through the week to be ready to go by Sunday to play the Rams? I don't know. Is it getting better exponentially every day? So there was a point like Friday afternoon, they're like, oh, he got it. He got it. Look at that. He's gripping the football. He's fine. Right? But at the same time, this was the guy that talked about quarterback controversies are good. I think he likes the fact that Cooper Rush is playing well because the Cowboys didn't die. Right? But I also think he likes the fact that Cooper Rush is playing well because it makes people kind of... But nobody is saying Cooper Rush should play over Dak Prescott.
right? I don't think anybody's saying that. And if the people are saying that, it's just to get clicks. I think rational people know that Dak Prescott is the guy that's going to take his job back, regardless of what Cooper Rush does. Dak Prescott's the guy they're paying to be the starting quarterback, and Cooper Rush isn't. And this isn't going to be a Bledsoe Tom Brady thing, right? Dak Prescott is going to be the starter. But at the same time, Jones knows that people like talking about his team, positive or negative. You know, it's like, Ron, did you see that movie Elvis yet? The one Tom Hanks
No, I haven't yet.
All right, so I got to be honest with you. When I went into the movie, I saw the movie. I don't know a lot about Elvis other than he was a big star. He came after my time. I just knew but I didn't know about his real life or anything. I didn't know much about Colonel Parker and all that stuff. But one of the things that I found interesting was in the movie, they're setting up Elvis to be he's setting up Elvis with all these deals to be a big star and merchandising. He's showing the parents all these things Elvis's face is going to be on, from pillows to perfume to games and cards and all, everything. Like, everybody wanted a piece of Elvis. And so he had these buttons, and the button said, "I love Elvis." And of course, hey, everybody. But he was also selling buttons that said, "I hate Elvis." This is very much like, Brian Bosworth. Remember Brian Bosworth when, when he was at Seattle, Bronco fans could wear Bosworth sucks t-shirts and all these anti-Bosworth shirts. They didn't know that they were being made by Bosworth's company. Bosworth was capitalizing on the love and the hate. So if you're going to spend money to love me, I might as well get your money if you hate me. And that's what kind of like Colonel Parker was showing, like in the movie, like, people are going to hate you, Elvis, and they're going to still want to buy stuff to show that, and we're going to make money too. And it was this, and so that's what I think Jerry Jones does in a way. I think Jones likes the fact that you can be the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars and get nowhere near the national conversation that Jones gets when he just opens his mouth saying anything, anytime. Right? I think he likes that. It doesn't have to be all love for Jerry. I think Jerry's like, no, he believes in all publicity is good publicity. If people are thinking I'm crazy because I think there should be a quarterback controversy on my team, when I said yesterday, well, that doesn't really work, does it? Like, isn't it better just to have a guy that's good? Like, I don't think Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love, I don't think we're having a conversation about who should be the starting quarterback in Green Bay. And that seems to be working out pretty well for the Packers. You don't want a quarterback controversy. You want to settle on one guy. But Jones is like, what the heck? I'll throw it out there. Let it be red meat. Everybody dives into the pile, and I'm good. Because, again, you're putting my team on the extra pedestal that I want you to put it on in the first place. Are people talking about what Brian Daboll and the New York Giants are going to do with some injured quarterbacks in Seattle? No. But I bet I get a side conversation in that city about my insanity. Of course he does, right? I think there's a little bit of a showmanship to him. Now, maybe I'm giving him too much credit. Maybe he is crazy. I don't know. But I also think he knows how to play the game, right? I mean, this is my explanation for I'm not ruling out a quarterback that can't grip a football on a Tuesday. Like, let's all just process that statement. The owner of the football team knows his quarterback can't grip the football, can't grip it at all after thumb surgery, can't grip it. But he could still play Sunday against the Rams. Because if Jones had come out and said in the interview, Cooper Rush is obviously playing. Dak Prescott can't play. He's not ready yet. Boring. Yep. We all knew that. Big deal. But why not go, well, I think he could play. I'm not ruling him out. Can he grip the football? Well, no, he can't grip the football, but,
he's got another hand.
Maybe he can do it the other side. Maybe he's amphibious.
Yeah, he's right? He's been practicing being a kicker.
Yeah, he's exactly. Maybe ruled out. Maybe what is he going to do? Go in and hand the ball off once, give it to Tony Pollard, and then get out of the game? What are we talking about here?
Jerry, I'll give him credit for this. He is the king at stirring the pot.
He does, man. He does.
You know, this is nothing more than just making sure his Cowboys are still on the front page.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what it does? What I like about what Jerry does is that he's so polarizing. He makes other fan bases who have very quiet owners proud that their owner is quiet. Where I'm more like, sometimes I want my owner to talk. I don't need him to talk all the time. Like, I don't need him to have a radio show, for crying out loud. I think it's a little much. But every now and then, I wouldn't mind hearing what the owner thinks. of situations and circumstances?
No, I mean, let's face it. I mean, there are some owners in the NFL we don't know.
We don't never hear from them. They never say about anything that's going on about their team. They never go to the press. They never talk to the media. They've made their money, and they've sort of pushed. They know what the media can do to them, so they go, nope, I'm not. I don't need it. There's no point. There's nothing in my life that benefits me by talking to the press.
Like right now, I'm not really sure who owns the Bengals.
Right. Right. Is it still the Brown family?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still Mike Brown.
But I know for certain who owns the Cowboys.
I think that's what makes him such an interesting. I find him, again, I respect him. Like I said earlier, it was the best way I could put it. There are things about him that I don't like, and there are things about him I love. And it makes me, though, respect, because he's not messing around with what he has, right? He does not for one second believe if I owned the New York Jets, I'm in the biggest market in America, right? I'm one of two teams in the biggest market in America, one of the premier cities in the world. But Jerry Jones does not look at me as an owner and go, we're the same. He doesn't. He doesn't look at anybody in the room as equal to what he has. And he's not afraid to sort of admit that. He's not like, no, I'm just one of 32 people. Or, you know, or 31 because the Packers are publicly owned. Like, I'm just one of 31 owners. He doesn't do that. He goes, no, I own the Dallas Cowboys. You own whatever you own. But I own the Cowboys. When you list the world's greatest franchises, the world, I'm on that list. You might be somewhere near the bottom of that and top 25 or whatever, but I'm near the top. And he feels like he just, that's what he does. So this stuff that he did on radio is nothing more than him going, yeah, because I'm Jerry Jones and I know people will talk about me forever. And I will, because I just find him fascinating. I think it'll be sad when he's no longer around. Because I don't think Stephen Jones is the same. From what I hear from Stephen, it's not the same.
It's going to be boring.
It's going to be boring. Like, I mean, he might do a radio bit, because they'll ask him and he'll probably do it.
Of course.
He's not Jerry, right?
But will Stephen hold this draft from his villainous boat lair?
Still, that's... Like, that could have been done anywhere. They could have done that anywhere, and he went, no, nope, yacht.
Yeah.
And like, of course
I... And not even that, but, like, you know, it's... I wouldn't have been surprised if he was like, you know, he had sharks with laser beams.
I was just going to say, exactly, right? Like people would be coming in, serving him food. He's like, didn't like it. Just push a button in the elevator. They slide down to a shark pool. Like, I wouldn't have been surprised at all.
They're like, oh, of course Jerry has that.
Of course Jerry has that. Why wouldn't he have it on that?
Just surprised the sharks didn't have stars branded on them.
Exactly. All right, it's Wake Up Call again on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. We continue at Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. So as we head into hour two, we'll have the good, the bad, and the dumb. So baseball playoffs start on Friday, Ron. Friday.
No, they don't.
The Mets are in the wild card round.
Is that not the most fascinating thing ever?
You know what? I saw a quote from Seth Lugo who said, he was talking about the Braves. And he goes, we think we're better than them. And we'll show it in the play. Really? Because you had three games in Atlanta.
Yeah.
To show that you were better than the Braves. And they beat you all three games. Don't do that thing where you're like, that doesn't count. It counted. That was the critical series for the division. And you blew it. You lost all three games. You went to Atlanta with a lead. You left chasing the Braves, basically putting it in their hands because there was nothing you could do. The Braves beat the Marlins yesterday, and that was it. It didn't matter that you beat the Nationals 8-0. You lost. Or was it 4-2? Sorry, 4-2. You lost. That's it. Right? And too bad. There's nothing you can do about it. Now you have to go play the Padres in a best-of-three series. A best-of-three series. The most dangerous series you can play. That is scary. You lose the first one on a fluke, you're done. You better get your act together and win the other two games. It's scary. So don't give me the when we play the Braves. I don't want to hear it. You had it. You played the Braves. You didn't win. So that game, the Mets and the Padres, and then you've got Cardinals against the Phillies. And then in the American League, you're going to have Toronto and Toronto and Seattle, and then Tampa Bay against Cleveland. Those are the wild card rounds. I hope these are entertaining. I thought the one game thing was pretty fun.
Yeah, but I'm glad it's three.
I'm glad it's three too. It's more fair, and I think the season. It's amazing that there was a time where you play 154 games back in the day, and then only one team went to the World Series.
Right,
like that was it. It was like we played 154 games, and now this is the winner. And now then they started going, let's throw some playoffs in here, and then they did. And now it's like the one game wild card. It was like, is it really just going to come down to one game, one pitching matchup? That's it, or do we really want the essence of strategic baseball to be in play? So it gets started on Friday, so baseball postseason. All right, again, on Twitter, hit us up. We'd love to hear about it, especially on 62. Real record, not a real record? Did it give you goosebumps? Did it make you bored? On Twitter, @TonyDRadio, @RonCulver, that's Ron with two N's. We continue with Wake Up Call.